carpet day!
Huh?
No!
Dada speaks to you.
Santa, you Mario!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. I'm all out of bubblegum.
He think he's bad, he ain't got no class. I'm gonna rock this shotgun up his motherfucking ass.
In 100 years, I'll have my revenge on your great-granddaughter.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
If you don't give me my money tonight, I'm gonna put that young girl of yours out on the horse, boy.
If you crave satisfaction, this is the place to find that action. And tell him I want him out of here in 24 hours. And 23 of them are already gone.
No, now it's recording.
Yeah. We got all that juicy gossip you just said. We did not record it.
Good.
Yeah. Hey, this is Movie So Bad and Good, Midnight Cool Classics and Camp coming back at you with another one. I'm Ian, and today this podcast is going to tear your soul apart. That is, you know, the tagline from the famous Pinhead from Hellraiser. But we're not doing Hellraiser because that movie's actually good. Flawless masterpiece, in my opinion. And the second one, even better, I would say. Nope, we're going to do the third movie, Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth. It's a very stupid fucking movie. Produced by Miramax, you know, the old Harvey Weinstein, when he was fucking actresses, when he wasn't fucking actresses, he was fucking this movie, and then the Hellraiser franchise, he fucked it all up, and we're going to talk about it.
In Hellraiser 1, Clive Barker showed you his vision of a private hell. In Hellraiser 2, he took you on a journey inside the Inferno. Now, the terror returns in mankind's final confrontation with evil. And this time, it's going to be hell on Earth.
Club. I really love it here. It's a great club.
Jesus Christ!
Not quite.
We're going to hell, ladies first.
Relax, baby. This is better than sex.
It's so good to be back. Clive Barker presents Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
I'm here with Seth and Daniel are back once again. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, thanks for having
us. Hello.
Yeah, thanks for joining. So, Daniel, I was talking to you before we started recording. You said that you've never seen a Hellraiser movie before.
I absolutely have not, and I absolutely have to say with this case, Ian, you always have such sights to show us.
He didn't even say that. He didn't even say that in this movie. He has two things that he says in every movie. We have such sights to show you, and we're going to tear your soul apart. And it's and he says it with such great delivery, and he did not say it in this movie. It's fucking stupid. So, did you have any idea what was going on since you haven't seen the first two?
I have. I think that the Hellraiser franchise is so iconic. Everybody knows who Pinhead is. It's like if somebody told you, we're going to watch Friday the 13th with Freddy. Like, well, I don't know what Friday the 13th is, but I know who Freddy Krueger is. Well, why? Like, well, he's a pop culture icon at this point. Horror culture icon, if you will. I think that Pinhead's one of the equally famous ones, though. If you had told me, we're watching the original Hellraiser, and I watched this, I would have gone, really? I wouldn't have understood it, but knowing that it was actually, like, how Hellraiser works and how Pinhead works, I wasn't too terribly surprised. It was strange. It definitely felt like a sequel slash et cetera equal, but it was not the original movie, and I felt that, but I wasn't too confused, but I assume that at least part of that is based on me chalking it up to bad writing.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad writing, all right. Seth, how about you? What was your history with Hellraiser?
I've seen them. I've seen the first two, the original two. So I've never watched the third one till now. And, but I was, it's been a long time since I've seen the first two. So, and I remember the second one was very trippy to me. Like, I think they go to hell or go to the other dimension or something in two.
Yeah.
It was a really weird fucking movie from what I recall. And I just don't remember much of what happened or if there was any, like, I'm not sure where the statue thing came from. And, like, was there something that linked the two in it at all? Or was just this all just some new concept for everything?
I think that at the end of two, he gets put in that statue. I think. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Okay. I mean, that might make sense. Yeah, because I know...
He gets trapped in it.
I know the first one really took place just in this house where, like, the guy was, like, I remember there was something about a guy who opened the box and had all his flesh ripped off or whatever. And then, like, he came to the house and had, like, his buddy or was it a girl? I forget who it was. It was basically feeding him bodies, almost like how this movie sets up.
Bodies
to get the power back so that they could be, like, whole again.
Yeah, they ripped off their original movie. It's a ripoff of itself.
Yeah, they kind of did, but, like, in a shittier way, the third one. First one, kind of, not that it really explores this concept, but it does kind of give this idea of, like, somebody helping their friend at the cost of lives of, like, all these other people.
Yeah, exactly. And,
like, but those are, like, the protagonists, in a sense, that you're following. It's very strange and interesting, from what I recall. And this one kind of lazily just, like, tries to lay up the same plot point in a fucking shitty-ass way. So,
very well said.
But, yeah, that's my, what I have. I don't think I've watched any others of the Hellraisers other than the remake that came out a few years back.
Yeah.
I think, like, two years ago, it came on Hulu or something like that.
I did.
The remake was pretty decent. I didn't think that was too bad.
I would not compliment it any more than decent. It's definitely not a bad movie by any means, but it's also not necessarily a good movie. If you haven't seen Hellraiser, then the new one would be pretty good. But since I unfortunately have seen the original Hellraiser, then it lost points. It was like, what's the point? It's not nearly as good as the first one.
Yeah, I don't think it was as good as the original either, from what I recall. But
So I'm gonna bring it down for you. So, like I said, the first one, great. I really enjoy the first one. It's a very well made horror movie. That it's one of the best movies, horror movies that came out in the best decade for horror movies. It's just, you know, on top. Then the second one came out, and you're right, it is a bit weird. It kind of goes off the rails, but like in a really cool way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same protagonist, Kirsty. She ventures into hell, and it gets really creative. I really enjoy it. Then the third one, which we're reviewing today, Hell on Earth, is just a wacky sequel. but it is, it really fits this podcast, because it's a bad, but it's fun and it's enjoyable. It's fun to make fun of. The Cenobites are ridiculous in this. Well, I'm sure we'll spend a great amount of time like making fun of the Cenobites, and it's so bad it's good. It's a fun time. Then the fourth one is the last not terrible Hellraiser movie. Like, it's definitely the worst out of the four, but it's still watchable. Everything that came out after that, I think the fourth one came out in, like, I'll guess 1994.
Yeah, I think this one was 91 or 92.
Yeah. So every couple of years that they make a sequel, and they just kept getting worse. I haven't seen any of the other ones. I did see four. And it had a really good idea. Like, they were definitely going somewhere, but Miramax fucked it again. And I heard that they dropped it down from something like 180 minutes, dropped down to 80 minutes.
Damn.
Yeah. So, and it's got three different plots. It takes place in three different timelines. Like, it takes place in like the 1800s, the current age, like I guess the 90s, and then it also takes place like in space in the future, because you gotta if you have several sequels, you gotta take them to space at some point. So that's the space movie.
It's true.
Then after that, like I've read a lot of synopsis. I've watched videos. Like, they're just not redeemable in any way. They're just absolutely terrible. And like three of them, there's like two or three in a row that have the plot of it was all just a dream.
Oh, Jesus.
And it just keeps getting worse. But the
new one. How can you do one... more than one of it's just a dream in a row? Yeah. Like, it's only one. You only get one, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. No. It was. I believe the fifth one and the sixth one.
No.
Honestly, I think it's all a dream should only be reserved now for a television episode. An episode of TV, you can do. It was all a dream. I don't think any more movies can do that.
So, and both of these movies...
super creative, unless it's a super creative out of the box.
Yeah, it was not. So, both of these movies, they both did it the same way. It was like, the main character, they're like, investigating something, and they're trying to like, find out how these people got killed, kind of like in this one, you know, like the main character is trying to find out like how that guy got ripped apart by the chains and shit. It's kind of the same deal, and then like kind of just their life falls apart around them, and just things get really weird, and then it turns out at the end that they were in hell all along, and they learned a lesson.
Oh, you did them a lot of good,
but they're still in hell, so who cares? So the first one, so Daniel, I'll tell you what the plot is for the first two, and you tell me how much the third one that you watched makes sense. So the first one, kind of like Seth was saying, yeah, there's this guy who he like finds the box. It's a puzzle that he solves. And that wasn't in the third one either, really, I don't think. That like she solved the puzzle. There was no puzzle.
There was just a box that she had to move their fingers around for the puzzle. Yeah. That was like her ability.
She did it really easy.
she was tapping it like a cat with a glass on a counter.
Yeah, they kind of threw away the whole idea of solving the puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what the first two were about, is, yeah, it's a puzzle that needs to be solved.
Hmm.
And the Cenobites come, and the Cenobites, Pinhead and his gang, they're not evil or good, they just exist to, like, when people open the gate, the portal, they show up and drag them into, and it's not even hell either, it's like this, like, BDSM world where pain and pleasure are mixed together, and they, like, drag him into there. And so then his brother moves into the same house, and his wife, who had a relationship with the dead guy, he like kind of comes back because like his brother bled on the floor. So the wife is, or sorry, so the guy who, his name is Frank. Frank comes back alive from like he escapes BDSM world. But he's just like kind of like a bag of meat, pretty much. He's just like, you need to bring people here so I can like feed off of their flesh and like bring my body back. It's a lot like the Mummy, like the Brendan Fraser Mummy movie. Yeah. It's the exact same thing as that.
Before the Brendan Fraser movie, though.
Yeah, so I can't say I ripped it off. The Mummy ripped Hellraiser off.
And I forgot about that detail, but yeah, you're right. Like, he was cheating on his brother or whoever. Like, there was the girl involved that was having an affair with him, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. Like, she's like, all right, like, she wants to bane him again, but he's still, like, he has no skin. So she's bringing him victims so he could like become like a person again so they could bang. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's her entire motivation. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know why any other reason why she'd be helping him out.
I mean, if I was Harvey Weinstein, that would make sense to me.
I don't think Harvey Weinstein
was involved with that one yet. Yeah, he didn't get involved to the third one, huh?
Yeah. But you're not wrong. so then finally like the brother's the last one, and he like puts on his brother's skin and his face and everything, and he like gets really creepy towards the daughter. He's like, come to daddy, but she sees through it, and she gets the puzzle box. She opens the puzzle box, the Cenobites show up, and they're like, we'll tear your soul apart. And then she's just like, well, what if, like, I bring Frank back to you? And they're like, oh, shit, Frank escaped us. Yeah, bring Frank back. And then she does, and that's the movie. I summed it up. I made it sound, like, really shitty and stupid, but it's not. It's actually a good movie. The second one, the wife comes back, and she's doing the same deal with a doctor of the mental hospital where Kirstie is that, because like if you see some like BDSM demon show up out of another dimension and your uncle tries to molest you with your father's face, you're gonna end up in a mental hospital. So that's exactly where she goes.
Oh okay
Yeah, so yeah, so the doctor there, he's like really into the shit. So he brings a bunch of like kills people and brings them to bring the wife from the first one back, and then they get like this like other girl who's in the hospital. She solves the puzzle box, and they all get dragged to hell. And like Kirstie's like wandering around hell, and it's like really creative. It's really cool. And the doctor becomes like the most powerful Cenobite that like kicks Pinhead's ass. and it kind of takes over the place. And then I don't really remember what happened after that, but Kirstie beat him. And then it turns out that Pinhead was originally a British officer in World War One who also got a hold of the puzzle box, and then he became Pinhead. And so
we'll see that in three. We'll see that in this one.
Yeah. They delve more into that, but it gets really stupid. He splits the officer who is I forgot his name, but the original officer goes to purgatory while at the same time Pinhead is stuck in the statue, but they're the same person and they're fighting each other, but they're the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes no sense. I really dislike that. Yeah. So, Daniel, everything I just said, what does that have to do with the third one?
Not very much. The third one could very easily be a standalone movie with no actual explanation for it to make sense, because it doesn't have anything to do with those previous movies anyways.
Yeah, it really doesn't. Kirstie's in it for, a second, and is just watching, an old tape.
I didn't even notice that, because I don't know who she is exactly, but the way that they tried to explain why Pinhead exists and all of that, it feels almost like it was supposed to be a prequel, but it takes place after all the other movies, so it's kind of disassociated from it. The only thing, I think it was Seth that brought it up earlier, that maybe previously the cube was placed into some statue, maybe? We don't remember. We were looking into that, but if it was there, then that's the carryover. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. This is the new generation. So let's go ahead and forget all the old movies. We want to resurrect this this movie monster, and this is the way that we do it. And that's how they do it. Exactly. And they basically just usher in the new generation, but they want to add a backstory. Okay, well, we explored what happens when you go deep into it. So what if we just go back to the roots? Where is that coming from? So that's a movie that we watched instead. And the thing that I like about it, not to get all the way to the end right at the start, but the thing that I like about it was 100% cyclical. This movie went from start to finish right back to the start again. Is, okay, so the cube ended up being buried inside of an artifact. And then what happens at the end of it is she places it straight back into cement that builds itself into a building. And I would... This is going to be part of my prompt at the end of it is the sequel for all of that. But aren't we then building an empire of Cenobites, Cenobite bankers or something, whatever that is supposed to be? That's what I hope the next movie is about. But we'll talk about that later. But I did like how she took it out, or how it came out of the cement and it went straight back into the cement and was built into a brand new statue of to me, if excess. At the end of it. I like this movie more than you guys probably did, because I didn't have to watch the good ones.
Yeah. I mean, no, don't get me wrong. I still enjoy it as a So Bad It's Good movie, but as a Hellraiser movie, yeah, it's awful. the building comes back in the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
In number four.
And I'm sure that they don't stick the landing on that, huh?
I've seen it. I don't really remember it that well. I remember the 1800s, and I kind of remember the space. So basically what that's about is it takes place in the 1800s where there's this guy, this French guy. He creates the puzzle box. He's a toy maker. He's I'm going to make a toy. And he accidentally creates the gate to hell.
I feel like that's something that most toy makers dream of, but they never actually accomplish.
Yeah. And then it turns out, 100 years later, his descendant is in the 1990s. And then there's the building that the puzzle box is, made out of or whatever. And I don't remember what the deal is with that. And then it also then it shifts to another 100 years later where it's in the future and in space. And there's a whole like space station that's made out of the puzzle box.
See, this would normally be my prompt, so I'm gonna have to come up with a new one.
Sorry,
that's the sequel we all wanted, but it happened. So there it is.
Yeah, but it's just not good.
it shouldn't be. It's never been. It never will be.
But it is. Number three and number four are the best bad sequels. If that makes sense, like. They're not as bad as everything that came after them. And eventually they, like, Doug Bradley stopped playing Pinhead, and they just replaced him with, like, some guy who's very clearly not him, and it just looks fucking stupid.
And that was something I do have to say, that this is something that helped to charm me into liking this movie more, is I recognize the voice and the face. So I was like, yeah, that's the guy. He does the thing. Like, even when he was stuck inside of the statue and looked kind of terrible, like, I'm like, ooh, that sounds good. And so my wife grew up only seeing the movie with Spanish dubs. So she had no idea what he sounded like. And she's like, he sounds really, really good and scary in English. Like, yeah, he does. Like, what does he sound like in Spanish? Like, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, he's the he's the only one in this movie that was actually pretty good. Everybody else was really terrible.
Yeah,
like that's true. They were really bad, like really bad. Where did they find these actors? And like,
yeah, I made a note about that. Just the delivery of lines and everything were so terrible. This was some of the like. Their acting was so bad that I felt like they needed to give Pinhead an Oscar for just carrying the movie. Yeah. Like,
yep.
Because when he came in and would deliver his lines and do his thing, you could see such a stark difference between what he was doing and what they were doing. And like all like the actor who played JP, excuse me, the two main girls, that we kind of follow throughout most of the movie. The worst one was the blonde girl, though, that gets killed, that JP fucks.
Yeah, yes, she was. That was
probably the worst actor out of all of it. She was really bad.
Uh-huh.
Although, I did make a note that I definitely liked JP doing the eagle while fucking. Like, he just that was end, crazy. Just, arms straight out, like he's soaring in the air.
I guess she didn't want to like show her boobs, so they like
there's a note
really far not to show them.
Yeah, and IMDb there was a note that she didn't want to do any like nudity, so to get around that for the scene because they wanted that fuck scene in it, they had him like grope her breast. So I guess.
Yeah,
just put his hand like, over him.
So, well, I don't get it. She's such a like a character that does not matter. Like, why did they go with that actress then?
Also,
she didn't act well.
She was the worst actress. Like, why her? For like everything,
she didn't act well. She was not incredibly gorgeous. It's not like they chose like a. You know, double S rate, you know, naked girl. She didn't even have that many lines, so none of it mattered. But I've seen them make these other calls in horror movies before where they're like, so they've got a C rate actress and she doesn't want to show her breasts, so we'll get a D rate actress and we won't show her face, but we'll show her breasts and pretend like it's her.
And then they didn't do that. But like I remember it so painfully well. Where like she's like trying to make small talk with him or trying to just chat. She's like, I like your artwork, and he's just like, yeah, let's not talk about that. Just leave. And she's like, I can't believe you. You shit. Mm-hmm. So
the actress here, she's done Predator, Concrete Jungle. She did video game voice work and Serious Sam video game. She's done video game voice work, actually. It looks like a bit. Yeah, she's done a lot of video games. Ultimate Spider-Man, Twisted Metal.
Did she show her breasts in Twisted Metal?
Maybe so.
Yeah, who is she in Twisted Metal?
It just says unconfirmed hot chick. That's it. It's in the game. She did the voice work in the PlayStation 2. She's done a lot of voice. Dino Crisis 3. She did voice work in that.
Was she a Velociraptor or a T-Rex?
I don't know. I hope a T-Rex. But they say additional voices, voice uncredited. So she's just done some side like voice work. In Land of the Dead, Road to Fiddler's Green. That's a video game. Oh shit. Yeah, just a bunch of video games. So which she did this movie and was just like, I'm gonna do video games now. Just video games.
That's fair.
I think the only other movie I see her have done is called Five Aces.
But her
poker?
Okay. Yeah, I guess.
How did they watch this movie and they were like,
oh
yeah, she can do voice work.
Oh, she was a dancer in Born to Raise Hell with Steven Seagal in 2010. So dancer good. Number three. So there you go. You got to do that.
There you go.
But no, I raised that same question. With how bad her line delivery was in this movie in Hellraiser, how did she jump to like, I'm going to deliver lines in video games? That does seem kind of weird because that was the biggest problem with her.
I mean, she's in it so little. That's the only problem. But
it's very strange.
No
her
good.
Career. I never clicked it till now, but I wanted to click to see what she done when we was talking about her and how she was in this. And her body of work is just a lot of voice work for video games, which is very peculiar to me. Now, it's not like star roles or a lot of heavy dialogue focus either. I would bet they just had her come on to make noises. Like,
yeah. I guess she was okay screaming when she was getting ripped apart.
Yeah, like maybe screaming, maybe like sex moaning noises, maybe like... like things like that. Like I can imagine that they probably hired her for that, because all her roles are very like a lot of uncredited shit. So it has to be like sound effects or like something to that degree, which is very, very interesting. How somebody sides, I guess, after seeing Hellraiser 3, and you're like, this is your resume. Look, we have a video game where you could just go. And we want you to do that instead. And she's just like, whatever pays the bills. So,
yeah.
You're welcome. I'm not a real actress. Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's got to have like a main job. And like, this is her side hustle.
Who knows? Hey, who knows?
Do you guys mind if I pivot with this one, though? Involving this particular actress, she involves my favorite scene in the movie, which I think was the coolest kill. And also the silliest kill at the same time, which was her getting thrust towards the statue and getting her skin sucked off with everything except for the sort of sound effect going on there.
That was pretty. It was just like, gotcha skin.
Num, 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 num. That special effect that they used for her there, and they used a couple practical effects. They used a couple camera bending effects, and this is one of my favorite physical effects that they used. And it was her just standing there flopping around in her skinless body, and I was like, "That was awesome." And then she gets fully eaten, but with the awful thing, and then all of a sudden, Pinhead starts talking shit straight to McClubbin. And I absolutely love that.
McClubbin?
Yeah, McClubbin. I feel like he looks like McLovin, but he owns a club and he's a party boy, but he's still got that baby face going on. So I thought of him as McClubbin the whole time.
I did like that they gave him... We opened the movie on his red boots. these very unique, specific, like loud red boots. And he wore them every scene that he had shoes on, was those red boots. Yeah. What
speaking was of boots, sorry, I'm just going to interrupt real quick. Speaking of boots, the girl that he was having sex with kept her boots on. Did you notice that?
No, I did not notice that.
There was a lot of choice. Boots going on in this movie. Everybody had interesting boots, and I thought that was pretty cool. That was one of my weird notes for later.
Well, during the sex scene, her legs are wrapped around him, and she's just wearing like boots that go up to her knees.
Mm-hmm.
Kinky.
Yeah. All right, go on.
No, I mean, that's about it. I just like that it opened up and it starts with the red boots, and I guess it's a theme because there's just boots all over this movie, and that's pretty great. The other thing I made a note about is it starts there with his red boots, and he goes into the Pyramid Gallery. And I would like to say, for something called the Pyramid Gallery, there were no pyramids in that gallery.
I was
looking for any like images, paintings, statues of any like pyramid structures. And this is a lot of false advertising there. It's called the Pyramid Gallery, and there's not one. I didn't see one pyramid in the whole gallery. I thought that was interesting.
Seth, I feel like that's a perfect example of you also grasping to look for real plot in this movie. Like, it's clearly supposed to be there, but you just every single avenue that you go down, you just can't find it. It says that it's going to be there, but it's just not.
No, it's not. And one of the things that was really kind of jarring to me was like just the way that it would just jump scenes. Like there was one where after the guy gets killed, the first person gets killed with the chains in the hospital where our main character, the reporter. There's a weird thing where they like she sees that it happens. Something else happens, I think, over in the somewhere, and then it jumps to like her in the van. It's talking about trying to get the news and how she's just not gonna like I think she makes a comment about her like the way she dresses or something, and she's not gonna like show skin for she's not basically gonna be a whore for news. She's not gonna show out for news and stuff like that. And then it jumps to the boiler room where all we see is people dressed very scantily clad. But it jumps. And like, I remember looking at the scene in the truck about this, and I was like, I understand that what you're trying to do.
Oh
no. It ended just as briefly as the scenes did. So with what Seth's saying actually is, since he appears to have just suddenly lost his ability to use the microphone.
Maybe he got sent to hell.
Can you hear me now?
There you go.
Oh, sorry. No, I was trying to highlight the point that I didn't realize I got cut out. That's strange. But anyways, I was trying to highlight the point that like you had this scene and it's built to like try and show, she's a modest character. Like these are like things like to get to know the character, but it felt like they just filmed it and didn't know where to put it and stuck it in the middle of two scenes that they wanted. And this movie did that a few times where it just jumped around on scenes. And there was no real, I felt, method to the editing process of like building those frameworks in a more seamless way. It was very kind of jarring how they did it.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you on that, Seth. To me, one of those things that I wanted to enjoy the idea that we were supposed to learn the backwork of who is Pinhead and how did it happen. And those war scenes did fucking nothing for me. It didn't make me care about Joey. It didn't make me care about Pinhead. They were just shoved in there like we were watching just a clip show. I was like, okay, now that's happening. Okay, now that's happening. Okay, now that's happening. It was, I know this technique, but they pulled it off with absolutely zero finesse. It just, they just shoved it in And we're supposed to pick up the slack from that? No, it doesn't work that way. We're supposed to have a suspension of disbelief where we follow the plot. And in this case, it was just shoved at us. And it was like, okay, I just don't know what's happening and I don't really care. But it desensitized us to each part.
Yeah. They tried to backhand it with the whole, my dad died in the war and I'm seeing his like last whatever in it. And I think at the very end, she like meets her dad and then it turns out like it's like a trick for fucking Pinhead to do it. It's like, it's so dumb. There was nothing really built into any of that. It was so poor. I just agree with you like that. It was just a real backhand attempt to try and bring some like emotional, I guess what I'm looking for here, but just some emotional resonance in it, like to get you involved in it, to make you feel what the character's feeling. And it just was kind of told at you and thrust it in there. And there was no finesse to how that was handled at all.
I do want to point out that the reveal that it was Pinhead is also incredibly stupid. So she's there seeing a vision of her father as if she has an emotional connection with him, but she's shocked somehow that she knows her name, or that he knows her name. Yeah, but like this whole fantasy setting is stupid in the first place. So like, I mean, yeah, this is your fantasy dad that exists in a fantasy world where everything's perfect. And somehow, even though he's dead, he still exists. And you're surprised that he knows your name. Like that's dumb. I'm sorry that he was, you know, your mom was pregnant while he was gone. But in this particularly stupid fantasy world, of course he knows that. So why is that weird? Like, the whole thing's dumb in the first place because she's so willing to give up this cube after all of her trials with it. But, it's just icing on the dumb cake.
Yeah. Not only is the story dumb and the movie's dumb, but she herself is really dumb because, like, Pinhead calls her. He just gives her a call. Or someone is like, go to the window. And, like, you really think that like, she gets a call, or I guess he was talking through the radio, or something, I don't know. But he's like, go to the window. Hell no, I'm not going to the window. Like, obviously, he's going to be there on the other side. And it's like, fuck that. I'm not going to the window. But she does. And then she transports to another dimension and is talking to the good side of Pinhead, the whatever his name was. Do you guys remember what his name was?
No. No.
No.
No. No. No. I barely remember Joey's name or Joy or whatever her name was.
Yeah, it's the main Joey. Character. Yeah, so she's talking to him, and he's like, you need to defeat Pinhead. He's me. And he's gonna be really tricky. And I'm just like, what the like, who wrote this and thought it was a good idea, and then who decided that they should make a movie out of this? Like, you need to defeat the guy who's me. But he's not me. He's a separate person, but he's me. But it's not me.
I don't necessarily hate the idea of somebody's personality splitting double and one person dies and one person lives forever to cause torment. But there was zero explanation of why, how, or what, or why we should give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
like the other one's just like in a statue. One's in purgatory and the other one's in a statue. See, it's not a personality though. That would make more sense. It's his soul, like, divided from his soul.
Yeah, it doesn't really make any sense. There's no... because he could have brought in any sort of religious thing and made it good. Like, oh, I'm an angel. I would like to be in heaven, but I'm in purgatory. And he's on earth, and he needs to be in hell. So we're both stuck in the middle.
Sure.
Bullshit, but
yeah, sure. yeah, because Pinhead is a Cenobite, which makes him a demon, which makes him like a spiritual being.
And I have a stupid question, Ian. Is a Cenobite a demon? I don't know this from this movie. They didn't say anything about this. It's in previous movies.
They call them demons. I don't know. From my knowledge, they've never really devised, like, this is the devil, and this is the Christian religion, and this is the demon. Like, it's, or any religion for that matter, that might involve demons and angels or whatever the case is that you typically see when you use the term demon. I mean, in the second one, where they kind of go to hell, it's not necessarily hell in that way. It's almost like just another dimension.
BDSM world. Yeah.
It's just kind of more like that, like BDSM, almost like they're, almost Rick and Morty has a better version of it when they've done it. That it's just like kind of almost like alien beings that exist in a different dimension than ours.
And they just really love pain. Yeah. Like they enjoy pain. So
he did seem to be more like a demigod than anything. He's got supernatural powers and the ability to control fate, but he's also got these weird things that make him somewhat mortal and bound to rules. So he seemed like a demigod more than anything to me.
The remake almost re-envisions them as like genies in a sense, where if you
gross do sex this, genies.
Yeah, they're kind of. But what they do is they'll grant you basically a wish or something like that, like power or like whatever it is. But it's one of those, like, be careful what you wish for, because the thing that you wish is not going to be exactly what you want it to be, because it's these fuckers who, you know, love to see you.
Yeah, these guys are such dicks every time.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I was thinking about, while watching this movie, I was kind of thinking, like, I wanna do an episode on Wishmaster 2. That's a fun one. It's kind of like this. It's an evil genie that
you could do Waxwork 2, Lost in Time, because that's the other movie this director did.
Oh.
Yeah, in fact, I think that's where he got his start. And then I was reading this little fact about him, and Clive Baker actually disliked this director, or at least his prior work.
Oh, I bet he did.
He believed he was a poor fit for the Hellraiser series, because he was known originally for horror comedy films. You know what's actually interesting? Do you know who they tried to get for this movie first?
Who's that?
Peter Jackson.
that would have been a good movie. It would have been very gory and over the top.
But he declined. His what he said was, quote, "If I made a Hellraiser film, I'd like Pinhead to be whacked against the wall and have all pins flatten into his face. I immediately start thinking of funny things and gags. That's just the way I am," end quote.
Yeah. It would have been goofy for sure. This movie was very goofy. Especially with the Cenobites, who all have gimmicks for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we never saw that before or after. Where, like, you know, Pinhead, his name isn't even Pinhead in the original. That was the name that was given to him by fans.
Mm-hmm.
So he just has a bunch of pins in his head. Because it's like a sort of torture. And then the others, there's like the chatter guy who like chatters his teeth. And then there's like, they're just like really like grotesque looking kind of demon like characters. Mm-hmm. And this one, there's a guy who's a cameraman. So he becomes a camera demon. Who has wacky fucking one-liners, like, ready for your close-up?
And then, like, shooting through the skull, and then, the camera shot.
Cool. That was definitely the best part of the movie. You know what? A couple of days ago, Daniel was telling me, like, hey, I watched the movie, but I fell asleep at the very end. And I said, oh, well, how far did you get? And he said, when Pinhead was, like, killing all the people in the club, I was like, dude, you haven't even seen the Cenobites yet. Like, attacking the police.
I guess that it was going to get that dumb, honestly, though.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I mean, I was going to say it was absolutely cool for so bad it's good, but I was like, oh man, now you guys are really going off the deep end here. This is like where you get wacky. Like when you hit wacky, you're no longer a good horror movie. Like you can have all the gore, you can have all the cool horror things that you want, but like that's silly. And you guys shouldn't have gone that way. That's how you actually cross the line. You just went from a scene where a girl is crawling over like an entire warehouse of dead bodies. And that's how you're going to follow it up. You're not going to have, you know, things rip her flesh off slowly through, you know, through sewer grates. You're going to have explosions coming out of every direction for no reason on a busy city street. And then you're going to have fucking RoboCop Part 6 come after you. That's ridiculous. What are these guys?
Yeah, and then there's the bartender gets a bunch of barbed wire wrapped around his head, and his name, do y'all know what his name is?
Barry the barbed wire bartender?
No. It's
Barber
Barbie.
Oh. That wasn't my least favorite one of it. It was the DJ. The DJ was
my favorite. Oh, dude, that was like, my favorite.
DJ no, was oh, no, my no. Favorite. I meant as far as like my eye-rolliness goes. My horror movie guy that loves bullshit that shouldn't exist, loved him. Absolutely my favorite. But he's
throwing CDs at people.
Yeah, the CD thing was pretty crazy. That was fun.
They like get stuck halfway into their heads.
Definitely shouldn't kill him. Like, the CD should actually probably shatter. It's the sharpest CDs.
Yeah, it should just like bounce off. I'm pretty sure they go through
bone. I'm sorry, Seth. I'm gonna fact check you on this one here. You think so? Yeah, sure. Why not?
I don't know, man. I don't know. The human skull is pretty.
Not all the way.
I mean, I think it'll go through the skin.
Just halfway.
Depending on how hard it's thrown, I think the disc might break when it hits the skull. But I guess it would depend on the disc. You know, I don't know how dense they make those things. I don't know.
No,
it should just bounce off of them. And they're like, ow.
You should cut them, I think, for sure. I think you'll see some blood. I just don't know if they, like, cut enough into your skull to kill you.
Like, yeah, no, they definitely went halfway into their brain.
Maybe if it cut, like, hit your arms, it can cut an artery or something, you can bleed out. I could see that for sure. But, yeah, with enough force to cut through your skull and then to cut through whatever part of your brain to just shut you off. I don't know, man. I don't think I'll buy it there.
So Seth, I'm not a material scientist or a biologist or anything like this, sure. But what if onto the actual disc they had recorded heavy metal? Would heavy metal cut through your skin and bones?
I mean, recorded heavy metal, like just the music on it, or what are you talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm being dumb. I've watched a lot of horror movies. I'm assuming that heavy metal is sharper, right? Sharper,
I don't know, heavier. Maybe you might need hip hop. I mean, gangster rap, I think for sure might break through your skull, but heavy metal, I don't know, man.
Dude, this is a broken bone if it's
hip hop, at least.
Keep in mind, this is 1992, so like, yeah. This is when, you know, NWA was already really big. I think Dr. Dre was... I mean, Ice Cube was huge. So, yeah, you got that. Heavy metal was definitely on the decline. Like, almost non-existent by this point.
Yeah, yeah. And so those CDs might not have been in there. So, you know what, sir? I think we have to take your theory out of here. Just get it out of here.
But especially with
the red boots that he was wearing. I don't know if I see. You know, I would love actually if that whole gothic like club of like what like have pain or like this like dark, you know, thing, and there was just some like country music playing through the whole thing.
That'd be terrifying. Are you kidding me? If Cenobite showed up into a country music bar, I'd be terrified. Like, oh, hell no.
Yeah, I think that'd be like, pretty hilarious.
What you doing here, boy? And then he just kills him.
I did want to make a note. We was talking just earlier about the kill scene for the blonde chick after the mm-hmm. when she the best one. So do you know who actually played the body?
Like, oh yeah, dude, I heard this earlier. I don't remember. I do remember. It's like somebody. It was somebody who's in another movie.
No, it's not in another movie. It's in this movie. So it's not Joey, the main character, but it's the other chick that was the girlfriend that started living with Joey and trying to give her the information. Yeah. That actress actually played the skinless body.
Why was that necessary? Isn't this the girl that wouldn't show her boobs originally? Like, why did she need a stunt double for the fake body that was skinless? What the hell's wrong with her?
I know. She needed a skinless stunt double, and it was the other girl in the movie.
What the fuck is wrong with this prima donna? I do not like this actress anymore. I'm officially pissed off at her. She's just unwilling to do anything.
Yeah, although the character of Sandy was played on screen by actress Amy Lay, the skinless incarnation of the character was played by a heavily made-up Paula Marshall, with Leia providing the voiceover screams. I know, you tell me, man.
That's so needless. So complicated for such a simple, useless character.
I don't know why they made all these accommodations for her.
Did they just not pay her? Because if you didn't pay me, I wouldn't do nothing. I get it. Like, we paid this girl. She has to do everything now. She's under contract. Really?
If you don't,
let me ask you.
You don't. You want to make sure your tits are covered up. You're delivering terrible lines. I don't know why I don't just get somebody else. I don't think it'd be that hard to you know what? You know, we're just going to do someone else. You can't deliver.
There's a long line of terrible actresses behind you willing to be in one of these movies, you know?
I know. I don't understand.
This is the 80s when, all of them showed their tits. Like, that was, the most nudity.
It was a scream queen thing.
All the horror. Yeah.
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 So I think you might be onto something, Daniel, where they maybe have just not paid her. Now, my question is, let me ask you, do you think that they didn't pay her because she didn't do all those things? They're like, well, if you're not going to do these things, we're not going to pay you.
Well, or, did you say this is a Harvey Weinstein thing?
It is, yes.
That might be the reason why right there.
I was going to say nepotism specifically. maybe she is related to somebody in the movie, so they're sure she got in, but she got to write her own thing, and everyone, okay, and just accepted it. But no, there's got to be a good story behind why she had to do such a bad job and nothing that is normally required to somebody doing a bad job.
So that goes back to my question. Did she do that out of retaliation because they weren't paying her? Or did they not pay her because she did a bad job?
I don't think either of those. I think that either one, she was just incredibly terrible and they just kept her for some reason, or it she might had have been something in her contract that just made it so that she wasn't ever going to do anything.
Maybe she fucked Harvey Weinstein.
Well, actually, I think the real answer of it is probably the timetable they had to film this. I'm trying to pull it up. I remember reading it, but they had a really small window of time to film and turn this around, if I'm not mistaken. And so they probably just didn't have time. They were seeing how bad she is, and they're just like, fuck it, we just got to go. So I'm trying to see, because I saw it somewhere, but I didn't click it out. But it was a pretty short amount of time. I think it's just a few months. Oh, wait, no, here. Transatlantic gave Anthony Hickox 6 weeks to shoot the film. 6 weeks. That's a month and 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He had previously established a very fast shooting schedule that used long hours, which meant the cast had to adjust to his unorthodox style and the studio's demands. Doug Bradley said that he worked for 17 hours straight one day, and the large number of scenes shot daily meant they had little time to perfect them. Hickox's preference for in-camera editing sped up production but limited the actor's view of the complete film. So that's probably why we got such stilted performances from a lot of the actors and actresses. They didn't really have time to kind of work through any of the problems. He probably was just shooting
and going. It was all like one take.
Yeah. This isn't like the previous Hellraiser films. The stages were all very close to each other and shared a single soundstage, which made shooting simultaneously with multiple crews difficult.
There's four locations in this entire movie. There's the club, there's the apartment, there's the streets outside, and then there's like this like nightmare realm. And that's another thing is that they stole from Freddy Krueger. Like he's like invading their dreams now.
Well, I didn't know if that was already part of it, so I just accepted it.
Yeah, no, it never has been, or I don't think ever came back again. It was just this one movie. They were like, you know, let's have like Nightmare Hellraiser. Why not?
So I've got two things to add to that before we move on. One of them is that with the club, I consider that already four different settings. That is the largest and weirdest club that I've ever seen in my life. She goes through the front part of the club, which is normal. Then she goes to the back part of the club, which is super BDSM. And then she goes into the country club. That's a part of it, apparently, where everyone's having a nice outdoors dining meal. Sit down, tuxedos, all that sort of thing. Yeah. And then there's the back doors, which is apparently a different sex dungeon that leads into the main sex dungeon, but also just owned by McClubbin.
Yeah, there's like a fancy restaurant attached to it. I would be surprised if the hospital was attached to it, too. Because they're just, like, bringing the guy with all the chains and shit. They don't even bother to take the chains off. They're, like, just dragging. Like, they actually cut the main girl. And then, like, when he's being attacked by the chains, his head explodes, which we see, like, three different angles of his head exploding. And then, like, they show his heart monitor just, like, go to, like, zero. You know, just flatline. So that us, the audience, we know that he's dead.
I was wondering that. Okay, yeah, that's what that was about. Okay.
Yeah. Like, they're like, his head explodes, flatline. It was like, oh shit, he's dead. Yeah, that was the first time in the movie. I was just like, oh, that's fucking stupid. Like, okay, so they're just assuming that everybody watching is just an idiot. Okay. And then I would like to bring up the main girl, Joey. How many levels of plot armor is she wearing? Like, layers. Like, she's wearing so much goddamn plot armor. It's so fucking ridiculous.
She's got super evade going on for sure.
Because, like, Pinhead shows up in a club and kills everybody, like 200-300 people, just like mass slaughtering fucking everybody. He's turning into ice and like impaling through people's heads. He's shoving fucking pool ball in people's mouths.
Pool balls, not pool ball. He shoved more than one into one person.
Yeah, no, that's what I said. So he's killing everybody. Then Joey just like runs away, and then there's like four different Cenobites after her, with like their own different. Actually, more. I think there's like six Cenobites, and
I think it's five or six. Yeah,
and they go and fucking like kill all the cops, and just like nothing can like escape them. That they're like the most dangerous, most killable anything ever, but none of them can like touch Joey, and she's just like barely jogging away. Like she's like barely moving away, and none of them can get her. And Pinhead's like, give me the box. And she's like, no. He's like, damn it. Maybe next time, maybe I'll invade her dreams. No, just fucking kill her. Like, why? And then, yeah, so she gives him the puzzle box through the dream. Like, the physical puzzle box through the dream is how he acquires it. Like, how
the fuck... There's a lot of movies that do that kind of dumb shit, man, where it's like, mm-hmm. you'll see the bad guy, and he'll, like, have godlike abilities, just destroy people with a fart. And yeah. then, like, the main character then just evades everything. He just all of a sudden just can't use the large arsenal of powers that he has to, like, get out of that. Because, like, I was thinking, well, maybe because she had the box... And she was, like, kind of rubbing it, like, trying to solve it or whatever she was doing to it. Or like she's just rubbing it off. I thought, well, maybe they just can't touch her. And then two of the Cenobites started beating the shit out of her. Like, they started kind of pushing her around and shit. And I was like, well, that goes that theory. I mean, if they can't touch her, like why are they doing it then? Because, like, I was
think that was really dumb. Thing.
Like, why is Pinhead not able to, like... do any of the shit that he's been doing to everybody else with this girl.
Yeah. Potter. So, it really compounds kind of hard. Like, there's a bridge between when all the other Cenobites are hitting her. Like, okay, maybe the things that he summons can do that. But why is it that he can't technically touch her, but he can cause explosions near her that can touch her, or he can cause those summoned chains. The chains can still rip her. That's so stupid. Because, like, that's yeah. part of his being. The chains are him, right? That's something I thought I understood. But they, so, okay, well, I can't touch you. Like, yeah, but I got a club. I'm just going to hit you in the face. Like, okay, well, that would have worked a whole lot earlier in the movie then. Like, all right. Oh, I can't touch you. Hold up. There's a chair and there's a couple dead bodies here. I'm going to pick up two dead bodies with my hands and I'm going to club you to death with them. Okay. Well, that would have worked a lot sooner and the movie would have been over. But it just doesn't make any sense.
Now, that box that she was holding, though, wasn't that the puzzle box that was kind of the main, like, gateway for them to come out of in the first two movies?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it, right? So then in this one, it's now shooting laser beams to, like, suck them in the box instead.
And like it's the all Ghostbusters. Out of the
yeah. Well, it's both. They both come in and out of the box.
Yeah.
By solving it. And yeah, you solve the box by fingering it. That's the way. Like, that. You don't see them, like, mess around with it like a Rubik's Cube, like take all the pieces in and out. No, they just like kind of like rub the little circle thing like a clitoris. And then
that is something the remake I thought did a little more interesting. Is give the box different layers of different like puzzle configurations, and it did different like things to that. And then if you were able to get all the configurations, I thought that concept was a little.
I did like that a little bit better, yeah. Because it's always like before that they just like kind of finger it a little bit, and then it just opens up, and then they finger it some more, and it closes. I mean, like I'm joking, but I'm not joking. That's literally what.
No, it's literally what she did. She just kind of rubbed it like a little massage to the box. She just kind of kept. It looked like though that. Some of the shots in this movie, it did look like she was trying to rub or move her fingers along certain patterns that were on the facings of the box. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe that's what she was doing, but we really didn't get a clear enough shot or at least an explanation as to how that all actually operated. And I don't really remember from the earlier ones if they actually, if they actually dug into that.
That's definitely my biggest gripe with like the original, because the original is really good, except for that. Yeah. That's the only thing. Is that you don't really.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be like almost impossible to solve too.
Yeah, but everybody solves it that we see. So that is actually the one thing I'd say the remake, I think they have a better system in place on how that box works that I thought was at least a little more interesting. But anyway, yeah, the whole Hellraiser thing, it's the Pinhead thing not being able to, her plot armor was pretty wild. A lot of this stuff was poorly handled, but it kind of makes sense if you're shooting the movie and trying to get it done in 6 weeks. And I guess I kind of get it. I kind of get why it looks like I don't want to say lazy. They probably put a lot of work into it, but just like a time crunch where they just kind of cut, because the editing looks like that, just cutting, like splicing scenes together because it makes enough sense. And it didn't look like they took time to like, oh, this is all the film we got. Let's watch it. Oh, these parts are a little disjointed. Maybe we can shoot another here or shoot another there to kind of piece together something, you know? But it's just like 6 weeks. 6 weeks, we ran through it. They probably had a half-assed plan of how the scenes were going to work together and then just kind of spliced it all up and gave it to us.
Yep. What did you think about this church scene? I thought that was really cool.
They said there's actually a line about this in the facts. The biggest issue was the black mass scene, which caused controversy in socially conservative North Carolina. Anthony Hickox had been refused permission to shoot in a real church, so he used a matte painting as a background to the altar. When the crew complained of sacrilege, Hickox told them it was no different than countless Hammer horror films in which Christopher Lee as Dracula rampaged in churches.
How dare he?
That's
no different, that my ass.
I've been wanting to do that again too, like some old Draculas. I mean, I did do like one of the first few movies that we did on this podcast was Dracula. I'm gonna bring that back. I love the Dracula.
I'll say I don't really like the church scene because I think that it's very confusing as to what they're trying to imply what these Cenobites are. Either they're demonic beings or they're these alien figures from another dimension, basically. I prefer the alien beings over the demonic figures. I don't mind either way you go. But I guess if it was more clear cut, I mean, this movie did try to straight up call them demons. Like they were saying.
She did say demons. She was like, there's a demon following me. Like, there's literally a demon coming after me. And the priest is like, there's no such thing as demons. And then he just shows up. She's like, what the fuck is that?
Yes, and to be fair, the movie is called Hellraiser, implying that too. So, to be fair, it's not the worst scene, but I guess
with the way that they pulled it off,
some well,
all the windows are exploding,
but it just felt like, oh, we need it. You know what? To me, it feels a little lazy because it's like the obvious, like. She just runs to a church, and we have this scene with a priest where it's like demon and sacrilege and blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, okay. Like, that's, I feel like even at this point in 91, 92, when this came out, that's kind of been done. Yep. So, but
it was lazy.
Yeah. The styling of it and what they did, fine. I'm not necessarily saying that's bad. The choice, I think, is bad. And I think that if they are demons, I wish they would lean harder into the religious aspect of it then. If they're not demons, the church scene just feels kind of hokey. And I guess that's my take on it.
I got two major questions. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that was all I had to say.
I got two major questions about the church scene, because the church scene gave us a really good Cenobite reveal from Pinhead. He took his pins out, and there was a thing attached to those pins, and he put it in a dude's mouth. And that dude happened to be a priest. What was he doing? What was that? What is this? I don't know.
That's the whole Catholic thing, because he was saying, like, this is my body, like, this is my
flesh. Yeah, but what part of his body was that? I don't have pins in my head. I don't know what part of the body that is.
I think he was trying to relate them to nails in Jesus, in the hands, and I think he was putting them in his mouth, because you put the blood of Christ in the communion service.
Yeah.
He kind of gave some lines of communion.
The allegory, I understand. What I'm confused about is, what was the meaty part that was wrapped around the spine?
The worm thing when he pulled it out. That's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it might have been a piece of brain, but I'm not sure.
That's what I wanted to think, but I got kind of weirded out. Like, just like, the fuck is that? What is he putting in that man's mouth? What is it?
Wondering the same shit too. I was wondering if it was like a worm of some sort, or if it was just brain matter. Like, I'm assuming brain matter, because this is all BDSM type stuff, and these are pins in his skull, so they've got to be penetrating his brain. So when he pulls him out, he's pulling like his brain out and feeding it to him. And that's just supposed to be like kind of the body horror of it, I guess. And that would be my assumption of what that is.
How many people does he have to feed before he can't talk so good now?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like, now, people later, and he's like, I'm going on. Hell, I'm going to do this thing now.
That's a good question.
Okay. Wait, are you that was like a Cajun accent. So are you trying to say
he's pulling that again, too? I swear to God.
Yeah. You're saying that my people, my Cajun people, my ancestors are all mentally disturbed. Okay, thank you.
They all are missing. I'm seeing your Cenobite. Yeah,
we're all brainless. Well, no, but actually, the point I would make, though, it goes back to my question of the demons. Because if they're demons, then the brain removal like that is just more symbolic, right? It's all kind of magic and hokiness anyways. But if they're actual alien beings, then he is losing actual brain matter doing that. And that is a serious question of what's happening to his level of intelligence, or whatever functioning is happening in that brain.
I thought originally they were little tiny parasites. I thought we'd see it wiggle in his mouth or down his throat or something like that. And I thought the alien thing was there. But when it didn't, then I was like, oh my God, is he going to be okay? Like, just pull little bits of his brain out.
So, Seth, the answer for you is, like, in the first two movies, well, especially the first one, they're definitely not demons. Yeah, they're like BDSM, other dimensional beings. But in this one, for sure, I guess maybe Miramax took over and they were like, he's a demon. Like, I mean, she calls him demon. Like, he goes to hell later. He's like, take me to hell. And then she responds with the amazing one-liner of, go to hell.
Does the other movies after this, explore more of the concept of them being demons compared to?
Yeah, I think so, because like there's the fifth one where like the guy, it turns out he was in hell all along. So it definitely like is less BDSM world and it more
presents the idea hell. That they die. And they go to where they actually live, which is hell, which is like the kind of idea of like, okay.
Yeah. The more and more it goes, the less and less Clive Barker has anything to do with it. And he's the one, you know, who wrote the book. Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of where people are going, we talked a little bit about this, this lady running away. She's running through the city streets away from the club. Then she runs into a church, and she is supposed to be running closer and closer towards her apartment where the door to hell exists so that she can send the Cenobites back, right? But she decides that her best bet is to run into an abandoned construction site that she's never seen in her life before. Where does that come from? Is that somewhere after the church before her apartment? Or is she taking a little detour like to get to Subway or something? I don't know. What's she doing there? Why is she running into this old abandoned construction site outside of a church?
And why is everything so close?
Yeah, right? It's like, it's a really short jog back to her apartment,
Well, that's how close all the sound stages. That's how close all the sound stages were. You got to remember, it didn't take that long to get there. You know, they had them all together. So, you know.
Yeah. But, fun. But like, in the story, though.
Thanks, Ian. Yeah. We were wondering about the story. Thanks for reminding us that that's something that should exist in this film.
So, yeah. So, she, like, she has a dream of meeting with her father, and she's like, here's the puzzle box that for some reason I'm supposed to give to you? That, and I was told by Pinhead himself that he would try to trick me. And then it turns out it is Pinhead. And she's really upset by it. She's like, you invaded my mind.
I really appreciate that when she's really upset by something and she loses, she falls to the ground and pouts.
I mean, that's one way to deal with it, right?
I mean, it's not our typical strong female lead that I hope for, but yeah, I guess it is one way to deal with it, is crumple like a little baby, but that's cool.
And then she's like, wait a minute, and then she just, like, transports both of them to, like, another location that doesn't exist. And then, like, the good Pinhead is, like, I don't know. He just, like, grabs them and he's like, send me to hell. And she's like, go to hell. And then they do. Yep.
So that's you're forgetting the super cool merging sequence between Pinhead
and Pinhead?
Admiral Jones. Good Pinhead. Yeah. Whatever his name is. I love the combination of special effects there, especially the little head wrappy that was going on with the physical effects where they've got their heads intertwined with big tentacles. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. So I have a question for you guys. If you can... So the best part about all the Hellraiser films are the Cenobites, and especially like how creative they get. This one, debatable, because they. But if you could design your own Cenobite with a gimmick, what would it be? Like, if you could just like create one to like. Beside these guys, next to the camera head and the piston head, and
Barbie. Mine would be. Have you ever seen Alone in the Shadow? Oh, what is it? What's the movie with the vampires? It's like What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah.
Okay, you know the talking, the vampire that sucks you dry with talking.
Oh, yeah.
I
would be a Cenobite that would do something like that, because my whole job and everything I've done has always been sales and talking. And so if I became a Cenobite, I would literally kill you by talking to you to death. I think that would be it.
I love that fucking episode. Yeah, the guy is just like, he goes to work and he's just draining everybody of their energy.
Yeah. He's like, just start talking to him about the intricacies of sodas and water. In like just pH levels and profit margins and cost, and I just do that until you took yourself out.
Yeah, there you go.
That would be my Cenobite. Yeah, dude, I would just.
I fucking lost it on that episode where he says, "Working hard or hardly working." Hey, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, right? And, oh man, yeah. I laughed so hard at that.
Either that, or I would have a NES, those light gun that you used to do Duck Hunt with, but it would be a real gun that looked exactly like that, and I would kill people with that. I would just shoot them, and it would be like the Duck Hunt sound, because it would definitely be a gaming-centric Cenobite is the other version of that I would be. So there's mine.
Okay, yeah. I was thinking maybe like a pothead. Who, like, his head is a pot, And, like, because they all have head in the name, so he's a
pirate. True. And, if it was mine, maybe it's like a PlayStation 5 for a head or something. I don't know.
Yeah. that's your gimmick. And, exactly. And then just, like, make video game characters come out and, like, fight them. And you're like...
No, but you know what it is? It's going to be that scene from that movie where it's just Jackie Chan and he's dressed up like Chun-Li and he kills everyone. Just hell like, yeah. What's that movie called? Where Jackie Chan, like, becomes every Street Fighter character. He wears the Chun-Li outfit and is kicking the shit out of people. Yeah, that will be the video game character I get. That'll be my son.
You think of anything, Daniel?
Of course I did. Death in a grocery store. I imagine going down the cereal aisle. You know, you get killed by a whole bunch of falling cereal boxes with Pinhead behind them. Later on, you burst out of a mural. You know what? Cinnabites.
Nice.
Holy shit. Flavors I was just taking a sip out of my beer, and you said that I almost spit that shit.
We have such flavors to show you. And I'm imagining, like, what he does is basically he's got two boxes for arms, and he's able to, like, sprinkle that stuff at you, and it's all a whole bunch of little pinheads. Inside, and they all just gnaw on you as they come towards you. Cinnamon spiced Cenobites.
Yeah. So it has to be cinnamon. Yeah, cinnamon. Yeah. And they're in little O's.
Yeah, of course.
Cenobites.
No, they're typically little swirls, but you know, like Cinnabuns. Cinnabites. Oh yeah.
Oh, no, Cinnabites.
So yeah, I'm imagining a dude basically with two boxes of cereal on his hands, and that's how he fights you, is by flailing them around, because it's no less stupid than what we saw in this actual movie. And little tiny bites come out and bite you.
Oh my god.
Can you tell that was prepared for this question? You didn't tell me what it was going to be, but I knew this one already.
Yeah, all right. That I'm so glad I did. That was great. And it's the cereal that bites you.
Nice.
I still think we have such flavors to show you would be the tagline for it.
Well, yes, yeah. That would be, but also they bite people.
Either that, okay. Or you could just go simple, and you could just do Snap, Crackle, Pop.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely works.
Yeah. All right. Daniel, you said you also had a thing for the prompt or
was No. I meant that was just my stupid thing that I was thinking of. Like, I was already prepared for your prompt.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody have like a sequel idea or anything? Yes. To this specific story, or like your own Hellraiser movie, or what you got?
Yes, I do. So I did look into the chronology of Hellraiser, and I did notice the same thing as you, which is that they've gone through pretty much everything they could do. So I thought about all of our movie tropes that we love. We love going into space. They did that. We love going to hell. I mean, that's the whole premise of most of the movies inside of Hellraiser. But where did we not go? Cenobites in the hood. That's going to be my prompt for this one. I would love to see the next set of movies where we've got Cenobites in the hood, and they got to go through and do the whole rap game instead of the BDSM gothic industrial thing instead. And they got to kind of adapt to all of that. So, I'm imagining Pinhead attempting to do like the little dreadlocks, except made out of pins instead. I'm imagining his terrible rap game, and that's pretty much it. It just sounds terrible. I don't expect it to be good, but I'm imagining Leprechaun in the Hood just with Cenobites instead.
Mm. Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Leprechaun in the Hood. That was a crazy movie. Okay. Cool. Seth, you got anything?
Yeah, I think I would go ahead and drop the box in heaven if we're talking about demons. And then, like, see angels and maybe, like, saved souls that are, like, they're in heaven. They think they've got it. And then they, like, open the box and let them in to heaven. And they just start ripping people apart and sending them down to hell. Just taking them out to heaven. That would be, I think, pretty interesting. And then Damn. You can even see fights with Cenobites and angels and stuff, too, which also could be pretty interesting. And maybe, like, the angels are, like, fighting with the Cenobites, and they start getting hurt, and then they, like, start liking it, and then, like, they start, like, becoming, like, they're like, we get it. And then the angels start turning on the saved souls in heaven, and then they have to try. And it's like, where do you go after that now? Like, that would be kind of, that would be really crazy, I think. I think you could do it now. Uh-huh. I think back in the 90s, you couldn't.
No, but not now.
They didn't like even filming in the church, so I don't think you could have gotten away with that.
Yeah, like that would be pretty wild, I think. It's just because you never, everybody always goes to hell and everybody always goes to that. But what if you disrupt heaven? I don't know if I've seen too many things that try to do something like that.
Yeah, so. You know, like Dogma is like the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe like they get to heaven and they think they're safe, but heaven is just a bunch of like Republicans, and they're all like super nice, and they're just and it's just unbearable, and they're like, fuck this. And then just like kill themselves while they're already in heaven, and like they go to hell. They're like, all right, this is much better. Yeah. Yep. All right. I guess. The last couple of episodes, I've kind of been skipping the ratings because it just takes so long.
Did you want to do the double feature?
Yeah, double feature is fun. If
I got one for the double feature, I'll do that to kick it off if you don't mind.
Sure.
I have right.
So here. If there's another similar movie you could watch alongside this, what movie would that be?
So what I would do is, and I don't know if I've watched this movie, but I'm going to suggest it because Children of the Corn 2, The Final Sacrifice. Both this movie, Hellraiser 3, and Children of the Corn 2, The Final Sacrifice, were shot back-to-back using the same crew to save money. So right when they did Hellraiser 3, they did Children of the Corn 2, the same crew. They went to one. So that could be an interesting watch back-to-back just to see, like, this is the same crew doing both these movies back-to-back to save money. I think that could be an interesting watch as a double feature.
Which one would you watch first?
Probably Hellraiser 3, because it looks like they did Hellraiser 3 first, then they did Children of the Corn.
That's fair. You know, I don't remember Children of the Corn 2 at all. Mm-hmm. I have no memories of that. I've watched
a few of them. I've watched a few of them. I don't remember if I saw it or not either. I'm in the same boat as you. I really don't remember.
I mean, I'm sure I have. I just don't remember it. I remember the first one fine. Not the second one. That's pretty good. And interesting. I would watch. I brought it up earlier because it just like kind of reminded me of it. Wishmaster 2. Because it's just as silly.
It's the same writer, I think. Actually,
is it?
They had a fact here, and I clicked his name. The guy, he actually was set to direct this movie too. There's a couple people that were set to direct Hellraiser 3. Peter Jackson was one. Where's the guy? Peter Atkins was originally meant to direct the film, but Miramax bought the series, they felt like he didn't have enough experience. So he's the writer, and they're giving him, I looked on his IMDb, his credits for writing Hellraiser, it looks like Deader, Hellraiser Prophecy, and then Wishmaster 4, Wishmaster 3, Wishmaster 2, Evil Never Dies. So, Wishmaster. It looks like he has writing credits for the Wishmaster series. So, that might be why you're associating the two. Looks like it was written by the same person.
Okay. I mean, you could really tell, because it gave me those vibes so much. It's very similar.
Yeah.
It really is like the same thing.
He did the screenplay for Hellraiser 2.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now that one was actually good.
He didn't write that one too. He just did the screenplay. I'm not exactly sure what the difference is between the two.
Okay. I see. Daniel, what? Oh yeah. So I would watch maybe Wishmaster 2, and then Hellraiser 3. Maybe top do like a 1 first, like 1, 2, and 3. I don't know what that first one would be. Something.
What else is it about Wishmaster 2? Other Wishmasters that match up with Hellraiser 3.
Well, I've only seen the first two. The first one isn't great. It's pretty dumb. But the second one is like kind of off the rails, like this one, like Hellraiser 3. It's just like kind of a similar plot. Like it's a genie that like he gets power from people making wishes, because when you make a wish, you don't realize you're actually like pledging your soul to him, and so like he's gaining souls. So it's kind of like the beginning of Hellraiser 3, where like he's trying to like get back to like his regular form by getting souls, kind of. It's just like the same, a very similar vibe mostly though. Daniel, how about you?
I'm inclined now to want to change my answer straight up to Seth's, just because it sounds like something that I would really want to watch one after the next. That sounds just incredible. The idea that like back to back, like, all right, guys, and that's a wrap. Anyways, it's time for this movie. Same crew, everybody, change your costumes. Let's go. What? Yep. Same everybody. We're gonna do it again, different movie. Okay, sure.
No,
I've got to imagine there's got to be a carry through with it.
Yeah, it's the same crew, but it might be different actors and stuff like that in it. But the same, like, I guess cameramen, the same, I guess props, makeup art, like people like that. I imagine are the same crew. But
there's got to be that same fingerprint then, no matter what, no matter how great the director or the actors or how different everybody is. If you got the same crew, you're going to notice motifs end up carrying through. Yeah. So that, I'd love to see that. My original answer was going to be Nightmare on Elm Street 2 as the second one to watch after Hellraiser 3. And I don't really have great grounds for this, but my understanding is that Hellraiser 1 and 2 were the really great versions of the particular franchise, and 3 was the one that you just kind of went like, oh, what the fuck? What did you just do with this? And that's how I felt about Nightmare on Elm Street 2, is watching that like, oh, okay, that's where you guys went with that. That's how you've decided to just go completely away from the good part of this. And I thought that would be... So I guess I'd probably want to watch Hellraisers 1 and 2, and then Nightmare on Elm Street 1, then probably Hellraiser 3, and then Nightmare on Elm Street 2. because I felt like Nightmare on Elm Street 2 ruined the idea of Freddy and the general franchise being serious. And that's supposedly what it is with Hellraiser 3. So I was like, okay, I didn't mind Hellraiser 3 too much because I didn't have that previous experience, but I didn't feel like it was kind of wacky. And as wacky as the original Nightmare on Elm Street is, I felt like 2 was like, oh, okay, that's a little too much. That's real dumb, guys. What are you doing here?
I have some information for you. The guy who directed Nightmare on Elm Street 2 directed Wishmaster 2.
I see. There we go. That's funny. So this is a clearly incestuous sort of genre here.
None of them are the original films. They're all like the second or third.
How many second or thirds do you ever have in your life? Apparently only 2 or 3.
I guess they all came out around the same time too.
Sure.
Elm Street 2 must come out in the 80s. But Wishmaster 2, I think, came out in the 90s. Anyway. Okay, never mind. Alright, cool. Well, anyway. In the words of the camera, Cenobite, that's a wrap! Because he did that. Thanks guys for joining. That this was fun. This was a lot of fun. We need to make fun of more shitty horror movies. Maybe Wishmaster 2.
I'm done. I've never seen any Wishmaster movies, just like Hellraiser.
Or maybe Children of the Corn.
That'd be a great head to head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ian versus Seth.
Yeah. The thing about Wishmaster 2 that's really funny is that, like, he goes to prison because who has more wishes than prisoners? So he voluntarily goes to prison, and one of the inmates, he's like, I wish my lawyer would go fuck himself. And then, like, he does. He literally fucks himself.
Nice.
Sorry. Yeah. So,
well, at least it doesn't go down to the dark end of the Make a Wish Master Foundation.
Alright, well, let's end this here. Thanks for joining. Thanks everybody for listening. That's a wrap.